This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
My Bookie presents Shake Them Ropes. Enter code ROPES, double your first deposit. Get up to $1,000 in free play. Only at My Bookie. We will plug them harder later in the show. I'm Jeff, he's Chris. Hi, how's it going? Chris, in honor of the news that for being the Elite, I believe it was. I did not watch this week's yet, but I believe they had Eddie Kingston cut a promo on a cookie in order to mock WWE's communications class. So cut a promo on pumpkin spice, which is the worst.
But you hate pumpkin spice, huh?
Exactly. Do as I say. So, this is my
show. You want me to grind your ass, or your axe, not your ass. You want me to grind your axe.
Well, yeah, I don't know, right. Chris. Is there something you've been wanting to tell me for a while now?
I'm going to try to channel your rage here.
My rage.
All right, listen up, pumpkin spice. For the last 9 months, who knows where you've been? You've been hiding, you've been running, you've been dipping and dodging me all spring, all summer long. When winter came along, when it was cold out, when there was nothing around, where were you, pumpkin spice? Gone. In the clearance aisle of some grocery store, abandoning me 50% off, no less. So, pumpkin spice, next week at the Garden, you're going to be looking square in the face of Chris Novembrino fighting for his friend, Jeff Hawkins. And nothing is more powerful than friendship. Nothing. You're going to see that in the Garden, pumpkin spice.
Putting over apple cinnamon, the true taste of fall. Apple cider, cider donuts, much better than rotten squash, propped up with a bunch of crappy spices. You heard me. I don't care who you are that you like pumpkin spice. Sucks. Stop it. Okay.
Also, since we're doing tributes here this week, in tribute to Dolph Ziggler's courageous performance on commentary this week, where he effortlessly shoehorned in a number of Motley Crue songs, primarily from the classic Shout at the Devil, I will be paying tribute to Dolph Ziggler by shoehorning in as many songs from the rock group Kiss as I can during the course of this show. Any way you slice it, Hawkins, I'm almost human, and I'm an all-American man. Ain't that peculiar? Four down. Hundreds more to go.
I don't know Kiss well enough to keep up with you. That's the problem here.
Well, then I'm going to bang bang you, buddy.
If you somehow fit in, let's put the X in sex.
I'm going to dance all over your face during the course of this show. Let's take it to Detroit Rock City. Hit me with some news.
NXT has announced a takeover for October 4th. That means we have like 2 or 3 weeks to build up this thing after two Great American Bashes and after two Super Tuesdays, another supercard in front of, they're not sure yet if they can get the Thunderdome for this, Chris. So it's looking like another Performance Center takeover that I just think we don't really need.
No. As Kiss might say, there are some who would say, give me more. But others have gotten all that they can take here, and they just want to get away. The NXT takeover here, I think it's too close. I don't think that a lot of these stories that they have been telling are really particularly fleshed out or particularly hot right now. That said, there are interesting things on the horizon, like Kyle O'Reilly's face turn, but NXT is still very much in a transition after getting the title off of Keith Lee, in my opinion, too soon.
And I just think there's not enough time to build anything with real heat. You'll have great matches. Don't get me wrong, guys. I'm all for great matches, but you know me. Great matches don't keep me, they don't keep me interested. I want to see the emotion. I want to see people feel something. I want to see people fight. And I think they could do without this. They could wait until Survivor Series weekend and take their time here. We don't need more content for any reason, I don't think. Even AEW is having a special show on Tuesday that was supposed to play due to the NBA playoffs. And I'm just like, dude, everybody's running way too many shows right now, in my opinion. But that's me. Some comings and goings, mostly comings on this one. In fact, I have no goings. Jeff Hardy
They're
has
all saying I will be there.
I'm assuming this is a reference.
These are all kiss. Any line that sounds weird or like something I might not normally say or slightly shoehorned is most likely a kiss title because so many of them are very simple clauses and phrases.
Do you have a checklist in front of you? Because that
I have the Wikipedia article and I'm just scanning through them for phrases that I could say.
Jeff Hardy has re-signed with the company, assumed to be 5 years because that's what the ordinary deals are. Looks like we're not going to get a Hardy's reunion anytime soon. And we're seeing two guys over 40 in a ladder match in a triple threat with Sami Zayn, who's been hurt most of the year.
Good on Jeff Hardy for getting 5 more years out of this run.
Oh, sure.
Because he has done nothing that has been dazzling to this point. So I think the big thing that's driving retaining him, one, is the AEW competition, and two, maybe the hope that Jeff can still draw some lapsed fans when they get back on the road at some point.
PW Insider reporting that Melina is coming back to the WWE. I didn't think she added that much to the NWA. I know that she's viewed as a star or a former star. I think there are other women you could put effort into here. I mean, we didn't do anything with Mickie James calling her old all the time, which just annoyed the hell out of me on this build to Asuka. We'll talk about that in a little bit. But
no, the misusage of Mickie James to me is very, very frustrating, and I think is actually a useful prism to understand Melina, because Mickie James is still performing at a very, very high level. And Melina, from my viewing of her work in recent years, and I've seen a fair amount of it, is nowhere near the level of Mickie James. And Mickie James has not been getting handled very well. And I don't necessarily think Melina is going to... it'll be interesting to see if Melina can handle not being handled well.
Well, who this hurts is anybody in the PC or on the fringes of the PC possibly being brought up with the sexy gimmick, especially if they're not blonde. I'm thinking Chelsea Green. I'm thinking Vanessa Bourne. It just depends on what brand she's on, because I don't think they're not putting
Melina's
they're not
being presented to. She might not be doing.
Oh no, she's doing the same thing she did all the time. They never change people.
You're right. Well, coming back to WWE, well, I was going to say, because in like recent years, she's been more kind of like the calculating older statesman type. But no, you're right. Coming back to WWE.
Nobody ever changes. Nobody ever grows. It's always play the hits for them. They want to see the Melina they knew.
James, too. Yeah. It's a good point. It's a good point.
Yeah, and Jeff Hardy. I mean, Jeff Hardy is still 22-year-old Jeff Hardy in a 40-something body. It's breaking down quick, it seems.
Do we have any other ladies in waiting?
Wade Barrett has signed a 1-year announcing deal to work NXT. Okay. I'm fine with him.
Not fine with him, though. You're not fine with him, though.
I'm not.
So get into this.
He's already worn out his welcome with me. I don't know why. It was one of those things where I'm listening to him this week, and it's already, I can hear the coaching. I can hear how they coached him and what the lines that he's supposed to hit on hard. It doesn't feel real. You know, Nigel, for all his...
They're slightly happy to have control of the broadcast a little bit more after Mauro's departure.
Yes.
Like maybe there's a bit of an overcorrection going on.
Well, that and also Wade left this company at one point. He wants to keep this job for a while. Like I understand it. It just, the commentary doesn't do a lot for me on NXT these days, especially because of Beth. Hey, there's a KISS reference. Yes. Woo!
Woohoo!
Nice. Nicely done. That is one of their classic ballads.
Yeah, Nigel's on, getting into it. NXT UK came back this week. Nigel McGuinness doing color commentary on that.
Peter Criss wrote Beth. Did you know that?
Yes, I did.
Peter Criss. Yeah, there you go. Yeah.
I don't know a lot about Kiss, but I know enough. Kiss Army. They'll probably sue us for mentioning them right before the show.
Like, there was not a lot of thought that went into this Kiss gimmick. I want everyone to know this.
We'll finish up the news, get into TV. They debuted the trailer for season 2 of The Mandalorian. Sasha Banks featured prominently in there, I think. And there's already a casting director who pretty big in Hollywood is asking who she is. And I don't think they mean what character. I think he was asking, who is she? I think there might be, because WWE requires you to ask for permission to do these outside projects, because remember, they created you.
Oh, and then sure.
And then you have to pay against like your downside to do these outside deals. It's very weird. I was reading the contract, the basic booking contract. You can find it on, there's an SEC filing of it, but it's like, it's very weird how they, you know, you get the time away, but you have to pay like 10% of your fees to WWE. It's very confusing.
This is kind of like what they're trying to do with Twitch, where it's like they want to have all slices of the pie.
Yes. Yes, and I think the time might come. I know Sasha loves wrestling, but if show business wants you,
she might shout it out loud, and she might move on from WWE.
That's a short window, man. If you got star power, use it and do it. I'm off, and she might just be Mercedes Varnado.
Well, it's also a short ladder at WWE too. So when you get to the top of it, you're never going to be more visible. Like, if you're Sasha Banks or Bayley, this is as prominently as you're ever probably going to be featured on this program. Like, yeah, they're not going to run the entire main event of, you know, like Raw or whatever through you. And like, it's not as though she hasn't main evented stuff either. No, I think WWE, as for performers, needs to be viewed as an opportunity to launch whatever vehicle you want to launch post WWE, and it's a stock, and you got to sell when your stock is personally the highest. Because if you hang around for too long, the company will do things that make you less important and less cool. Like Braun Strowman, I'd argue he hung around too long.
I tend to think that Sasha has more Rock/Cena leverage than, say, if you remember when CM Punk did the Colt Cabana podcast, where he was the hottest thing in professional wrestling, and companies were coming to WWE to use him, and Vince kept on offering like Sheamus to do the Slim Jim spots instead of CM Punk. That's not going to happen with Sasha Banks. It would have happened with like Bayley, but it won't happen with Sasha Banks. I could see her having leverage to go do these projects. I think
the familial ties and stuff help her out too. Like, she comes from a show business family, unlike some of these other performers too. So it's like she has connections outside of WWE and has some establishment outside of WWE that she can work through.
Per the Wrestling Observer, WWE applied for trademarks for the terms Ashante Adonis, which is the new name Tahuti Miles has been going under, and Desmond Troy, which is the new name of former college wrestler Denzel DeJarnette, who also lost this week, I believe, on NXT, if I recall correctly, if I'm getting my shows correct. I like Denzel DeJarnette a lot. I hope that this repackage starts something. Yeah.
It will be a trial by fire.
And finally, in the news section, Lindsay Dorado's gimmick may be changing. On Instagram, he showed himself looking at his mask and wrote goodbye. So he may be out of the Lucha House Party gimmick, or maybe unmasking.
The unmasking has such a poor track record in WWE. It's just like, I get how these guys get, like, they don't really get talked into it. You just have to do it. It's part of your contract or whatever. But, like, man, it is never the start of something good, right? Like, is there an example I'm missing where we got the mask off of somebody and that really booted them up?
Quang?
Okay, yeah, no, you're right. Yeah, Yeah, yeah.
there's a rare. I liked Quang.
Gotta hand it to Quang.
I liked Quang. Come on. Maybe Al Snow as Avatar or PJ Polanco as the Portuguese Man of War.
Okay, right, but like, okay, in the case of PJ Polanco as the Portuguese Man of War, he had to go to ECW and become just incredible to really get
better. That's very true.
Yeah, like,
well, now the one guy had helped.
He would have been Aldo Montoya forever.
Now, the one guy that helped for me was, well, I mean, in addition to the, like, the normal ones, but Paul Diamond becoming Kato and reuniting Bad Company as the Orient Express. I thought that was a brilliant
move. So I'll give you one where I actually do think it helped. It wasn't WWE, though. WCW, Juventud Guerrera.
Yeah.
I think Juve losing the mask, that angle was actually really effective for him.
Yeah.
Because the mask was cool, but, like, he's such a good-looking guy that, like, having him unmasked was not, like, so tragic. What was more tragic is this dude's ability to self-sabotage.
Yeah, and he's such a smartass that you couldn't convey that behind the mask. You had to... He was doing, like, the Rock ripoff stuff.
Yeah, no. There's a lot of character stuff that he was able to do without the mask. I think he really benefited from it, but, you know, like... God, Vince probably would have tried to unmask Ultimo Dragon if he had the chance.
All right, let's get all the main roster stuff out of the way. Actually, let's get NXT UK out of the way, because I don't have a lot to say about that one. Kaylee Ray is one of the best characters in this company, rain or shine. NXT UK coming back like only NXT UK could. Which means they didn't change a damn thing about any of this.
My favorite thing is that the Kenny Williams and Amir Jordan angle was cryogenically frozen,
yes,
like Han Solo, and thawed out. His labrum is still messed up, Jeff. Amir Jordan's labrum was torn.
The WWE Universe, time never moves on, Chris.
If 8 months had went by and my labrum was still jocking me 8 months later, I'd be thinking about a career change. If I was Kenny Williams and my tag team partner had an injury that would not go away, I'd be thinking about a new tag team partner.
Sid Scala appears to be forgiven of his trespasses, which is an interesting choice.
I think they just had to do a blanket benediction for this roster if they wanted to bring back NXT UK. I'm not condoning that.
No, I'm not either. I'm not, but...
I'm just laughing at the absurdity of it.
Well, I mean... You know what's weird is there is so much junk. Wow, was that a cat?
Yeah, that's a little rumble between the cats. That had more heat than the new NXT UK.
Very true. The Kaylee Ray segment's the only one that stood out to me as being any good. I mean, yeah, sure, we got a reintroduction of all the tag teams in NXT UK, and mostly, look, I love The Hunt. You love The Hunt. They're great.
I like Gallus. I think Gallus is fun.
Pretty Deadly's there. You know, it's a fun little division, even with Jordan and Williams, and then the Whoop guys. They came out last year, okay.
You know, the other thing that killed me is one of the guys on commentary went, you know, they say the NXT UK tag division is one of the best kept secrets in the company. And this company loves to use that line, but it's particularly hilarious for a brand that's been, like, disregarded for 6 months. But also, it's a complete misusage of the phrase best kept secret. Like,
yes.
As though we've got it locked up like a state secret at NSA headquarters or something.
Oh, but one thing NXT UK has learned is the Kevin Dunn camera cut. Good.
That paired with some experimental wrestling angle coverage that never needs to be reproduced ever again. Jeff, the camera angle somehow managed to make this venue seem both big and tiny at the same time. And, like, not in the good way, but, like, in the worst aspects of both of them. Like, they'd go super wide and it'd look ugly. They'd go super narrow and everything would look squished and, like, super cramped. Weird off center angles and, like, diagonal style angles. Just horrible camera coverage paired with Kevin Dunn jumpy editing stuff.
The arena is static. We have to make it seem lively. So we're going to move. So we're going to cut the camera all the time. That has to be the thinking here, right?
We need to make the energy happen. That paired with a white hot Ilya Dragunov promo. Boy, don't him and Noam Dar just get you pumped for the reboot of this brand?
I'm going to tell you something. I dug Noam Dar on this show. I did.
Okay, I like Noam Dar, but like, you are bringing back this show.
But he hasn't changed a bit either. None of these guys have changed.
Nothing has changed. There's no, like, no fresh thing. And, you know, like, when COVID started, and initially we were, you know, discussing whether they should keep going, whether they should pause. And, like, we were talking early on about, like, how maybe they should pause, and during that time they could take some time and write out some angles and start getting some, like, long-form stuff in place and long-form plans in place so that you could execute those and still do a little bit of the week-to-week booking stuff, but have some big pieces set. Now I am convinced, given how the NXT UK experiment has played out, that time would not have made any difference. What you are getting is what you are getting.
They
this
literally
company
hit
is only
a,
so inspired.
They hit a pause button, and they left for 6 months, and they just hit play again. Okay.
But if they don't care about the show any more than to just hit pause on it and not even try to, like, freshen it up, put a new coat of paint on, like, why am I supposed to buy in?
Chris, I will free you from the bonds of having to watch this week to week. I'll tell you if there, I'll watch it. I'll scan it. If there's any match
worth watching,
I'll let you know.
I'm not saying it won't pop on. I'm not saying we'll never talk about it ever again, but, like, I just...
You, me, and Joe Lanza are the only people who have watched every episode of this.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's like 205 Live or whatever. I still occasionally watch that, which sounds weird, and I'm not like some sort of completionist or whatever. But like, sometimes I just want to have like something on while I'm cooking or whatever, so I'll still pop it on. But like, they are completely devoid. You can tell when WWE has checked out on a piece of television real estate. And 205 Live and NXT UK are very much in the WWE main event, you guys just do whatever sort of category now.
Yeah, we don't have anything for you, but go wrestle a good little match on this show. And then make everybody, like, this week on main event, they had a really good match with White Meat Babyface Humberto Carrillo.
Oh, Dimples, I love him.
He's never coming back because of Dominic Mysterio. And Ali. It was a really good match. It was.
Is the theory here that Carrillo can't come back because he'd outclass Mysterio in every way?
Yes.
I think that's right. Yeah, no, I think that's correct. Yes.
Look, we got a star here, guys.
We already got something.
Got a young Hispanic babyface. We don't need any more. Can't possibly make two of them.
No, or you couldn't possibly have them be friends in like a tag team or something like that, too.
People don't have friends, Chris. This is WWE.
No.
Our babyfaces are strong, independent men.
They are loved, but from afar.
Oh, let's get into this main roster. Let's get into a little bit of Raw.
Absolutely.
So.
Oh, wait. Hey, you know what? There's actually a Kiss song called In Your Face.
In Your Face. All night long. We go through 4 months of thinking Angel Garza might be something on this main roster when we bring him up. And Andrade feuding. And the end result is that the person they're going to push out of this is Zelina Vega. Well, we have
Bianca
Belair.
That's not shocking to me either.
No, it's not.
No, it's ridiculous because of the way they've been booking it. But like,
absolutely ridiculous.
No, it's ridiculous, but it's not shocking to me.
No, it's not. I'm just like, so we went through all that just for Zelina Vega to have a title match with Asuka. And look, this Clash of Champions is throwaway match after throwaway match. It really is. They're trying to build these people, but we know most of them aren't probably winning. I mean, unless it's a major, like, title feud.
But that actually highlights a real problem with the Zelina push, in the sense of, if you are not putting the title on Zelina, and she's, quote-unquote, the one who's getting pushed out of this trio, all three of them are going to be in Nowheresville after Clash of the Champions.
So there are 5 speaking members of Retribution, and then other members of Retribution who may not be members of Retribution. Do I have this correct?
Yeah, because like there's like the tribunal, let's say, the Ret Tribunal.
Now, are the non-tribunal members of the PC who have been there for a while that want revenge and stuff, or are they just people?
I think it could be backstage parking guys. Adam Pierce, I hear, is not a very good manager of people. A lot of people are very upset with the way Adam Pierce has been managing things backstage. So you have that parking attendant guy who got roughed up by Big E this week. He seems pretty big. He's probably pretty angry about stuff. You know, any number of people could be part of Retribution. That's what's so great about it. It's such a fun angle because of that.
It's still the same five that I said before, but, yeah. And of course the Hurt Business are going to be the ones to fight them.
I found this to be like a real misstep. I love the Hurt Business. And yes. I think that like MVP, I think that Cedric Alexander's a nice addition to this. Everyone's got a role inside of the Hurt Business. It's different because like MVP's the mouthpiece, but like he always refers to Lashley as the CEO, which creates an interesting kind of dynamic for the main mouth guy to kind of be playing off of here. Having them as the people who are going to save Raw, even as a red herring, it feels out of character. Or if, and then when you had the Hurt Business get into it with the main event angle, I thought that that was like really the wrong move. Cause like, you know, the Hurt Business versus Retribution as a match doesn't work because it's heel faction versus heel faction. And there's no reason to turn the Hurt Business face right now. And arguably, like, they've done nothing to earn that face turn. Retribution's obviously not faces, not in Vince's eyes, and, like, certainly not in the presentation on screen. And that, it's just a bad fit.
Let me pick it up here. I have no problem with heel factions and heel factions fighting. I don't. I think it's natural.
No, like the Shield and the Wyatts was white hot, but you had to establish both of them first.
You also have to establish that the Hurt Business is not doing this because they love the WWE so much. They have to be self-interested as a reason to fight Retribution. And there's no self-interest here.
It's a clear, obvious thing that they're gunning for right now. And having them inserted all of a sudden into Drew McIntyre's main event picture when you've got Keith Lee and Randy Orton up there with Drew, like, it just... it adds unnecessary confusion, especially when the guy who you'd probably want to insert into the main event picture would be Lashley, and Lashley's already got a title.
Yes. Yeah, I thought it was also too soon for Keith Lee and Drew, but they got out of it. So.
Yeah, but the end of Raw, I thought, was an unforced error in stories that were actually kind of... like, even the initial opening tease of Retribution offering to Pierce, hey, we'll do this, but we want a transaction. Like, we're doing this in a purely transactional way. That was intriguing to me. Where it stopped being intriguing is when it intersected with the main event angle, because Retribution's so stupid. And, like, the angle itself is so stupid. And it's kind of like the main event angle here on SmackDown, too, with Jey Uso and Roman Reigns, we'll get to. But I just thought they were trying to do way too many things in that main event angle.
So we're gonna get a third member of the Mysterio family involved in this angle. Can we have two Aaliyahs on the roster?
Yeah. I mean, you know, who isn't pumped for that?
Yeah. I had another point. I can't remember what it was out of Raw. I was trying to figure out what I wanted to ask, but, I think that'll do for right now until I can remember.
The Buddy Murphy thing, I think they've just tried to zig and zag too many times with him.
I agree.
Yeah, I think once you get him out. Ryan and Morgan, looks like we might be doing a little bit of a title push for these two.
Yeah.
Yeah. Actually, wouldn't surprise me if they end up beating Nia Jax and Shayna Baszler.
Yeah, and then they can move on to the Shayna and Nia program they've won for a while.
Okay, here's my thoughts. Dabba Kato...
That's what I was the
you
Braun
and I
Strowman.
You always talk about fundamental wrestling builds, Jeff.
Yes, yes.
Dabba Kato presents an interesting wrinkle to us because on every level, Dabakato has been built in a way that you and I would approve of in a long-form booking pattern. You introduced him the first week. He had strong wins over enhancement talents.
Preach.
He has recurred on a regular basis in an intravolic pattern, but not too often so as to be overexposed.
Squash matches.
Yep, he's been protected every time he has encounters with people. Mm-hmm. And now we've built this dude to a match with Braun Strowman. And if you've been watching all along, it's not implausible.
No, but what is Braun Strowman doing at Raw Underground?
He is fighting. Everyone fights at Raw Underground. It's a place where fighting happens.
Did he use his quarterly pass to go to Raw from SmackDown?
That's one of the... You don't need rules for Raw Underground. One of the exciting things at Raw Underground
is that anything
can happen. It's a place that's a little bit on the edge.
You know what they need is they need a constitution. They need rules. They need a committee.
What they need is lawlessness. What they need is a little bit of... Here's the problem, Jeff. Your society's got too many rules. Your ring, your ropes, your referees, your bells. Too many. Too many. Hard to follow. Raw Underground, no ropes. No bells. Yelling. Shane on commentary. Not three people. Shane barely calling the action. This is simpler. It's purer. It's sport.
Oh, SmackDown. I liked the follow-up. I liked Bayley Sasha. I think Bayley should have been able to hit the chair again, though, before bringing it up.
You didn't find Sasha to be melodramatic? Like, I just...
Of course I did.
Yeah.
Because they're not... Okay, look. Maybe this is just because I like the performers involved here that I'm forgiving them of the melodrama, but I can't also think they never... What's the last subtle program WWE ever did?
It feels like Bayley and Sasha are largely directing this, though.
Yes.
So I just thought that Banks could have been a little bit more reserved.
I didn't even want her on this program at this point. I still want her selling the energy, for God's sakes.
Yes.
She should be on site. She should be, if you're going to do this, do it from a hospital bed or something. You know, you have access.
Don't tell me why she would be on site if she couldn't wrestle, especially given the current climate.
I'm going to go backstage and do an interview.
Give me the...
They're not
going to
stop me, Chris.
Swab. I can't even wrestle tonight.
Yes. I can't be cleared physically, but my presence alone.
I want to be in the bubble.
Always
fun to do that with a neck injury.
You know what's fun in wrestling is legal maneuver.
Oh, everyone loves a good legal angle. There's so many memorable ones.
Restraining orders and...
I feel like the only time that worked was with Stone Cold Steve Austin, because Austin is like, screw the law. And what never happens in subsequent like law angles, up to and including Moxley, really, a little bit of that with him beating up the lawyer, but you never get the... like, screw the law energy thing that a legal angle to me really should invoke. And the idea to me of a legal angle in wrestling, if we're talking about the morality stuff and like, how does it work for an audience? It works because the logic is that the cowardly man or cowardly performer, male or female, is hiding behind law because in objective fairness and also in just a battle of might makes right in both standings, they would not win. Like, they don't have a standing on a moral basis. They wouldn't have a standing in a fair fight. So they're hiding behind the law. That's how the angle's supposed to work. And the babyface is supposed to slash through that wall of the law. A thing that so often in our lives, as watchers and viewers and people trying to escape from reality, we find it much harder to do in reality. The babyface gets to do that for us. And so often with these legal angles, and Otis is going to fall victim to this the same way, it does not happen, or they get pwned by the law.
I want a montage of Otis doing night school and learning legal maneuvering. And I want him to win the case. That's what I want. I want him to give some impassioned speech about how he Your Honor.
Your Honor.
And may it please the court.
I'd like to address the court.
Can do I not. Do not
my
take
ham
my
ham sandwich up as I'm doing it. No. Okay. I'll put it down. Put it down.
Don't let my looks fool you. I truly, he just starts with this eloquent inherit the wind type of closing where he wins the case and they carry him, as opposed to what they're going to do is he's going to get tricked out of this contract somehow, right?
No, I think Tucker's trying to screw him over.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, no, I the tell to me, or the thing that got my antenna up at least, was that you've got a legal problem line right at the end of that scene.
Okay.
Yeah.
I did love that with
the heel beard there. I don't know. I'm starting to see some signs that maybe Tucker's not as good of a friend. This contract is corrupting Tucker.
Otis's simplicity in his comedy is amazing to me. It just is. You loved serving. What was the line?
What are we serving? Look, he's funny. He's an obviously funny dude.
And I loved the huh?
I hate the news, Tucky. It was another good line of his.
Yeah.
He's funny, dude. Like, he's really funny. But it's unfortunate because it's like, okay, he is funny, but I see so much more in this guy. As an underdog powerhouse dude, who the same way people see Big E, I think Otis could do that same thing. Powerful dude, big guy, funny. Otis has got that same thing.
Anything else from the main roster?
We need to talk about the main event angle here on SmackDown.
Okay, go for it.
Yeah, all right, so you got Roman Reigns and Jey Uso in another one of these tag matches with Baron Corbin, because Baron Corbin has to be on the main event of SmackDown every week. It's in his contract. Apparently, that's what being King of the Ring is. And Sheamus, it will never, ever, ever go away. This was just, it was a misstep in what has been a good angle with Reigns and Jey Uso. It was weird to have Reigns and Jey Uso work together, because to me, the whole story of this angle is Roman has changed. Jey does not understand to the extent of which Roman has changed. He gets that Roman's a champion. He gets that Roman's a little bit different. But he doesn't understand how different Roman is.
Jey's a stupid baby face.
Yeah, he's really dumb. But sometimes, what's weird about it too is sometimes he's in Roman's face about it too. He's like, "I'm gonna get a title shot."
It's weird because it's like he knows, but he doesn't want to admit to himself, right? And then he just doesn't know at the same time. It's like, dude, it's like, hey man, we ain't kids anymore. I'm like, that was a great kind of foreboding line where it's like, oh, I know I'm in a fight right now. But then he goes back to that happy-go-lucky, let me hug my boy Roman type thing, and you're just like, what?
Yeah, the whole, come on outside. Come out of the ring. Come on, let's celebrate on the stage. You know, we're babyface. We walk out on the ramp together. We stand at the top of the stage. Yeah! The logo goes up. Yeah, no, it's like, it was very weird. And the same thing with the Roman face flip switch moment.
Yes, yes.
So that, if you're going to do that, should have happened in the hug when they're hugging, rather than Roman smiling and feeling the love and hanging on to that, like, I love you face for so long that you're legitimately confused about what the hell is going on in this angle. And then, as Jey is walking away with his back turn, then and only then, when Jey could turn around at any moment and see you in angry heel face, that's when you put on the mean mug. And Jay's so stupid and so happy that he's still like, oh, come on, party on the ramp with me. They're going to do the logo. Yeah, it was very...
In the hobby, it's not easy being a fan of ripping packs or repacks. We hype ourselves up thinking, maybe I can pull a Ken Griffey Jr. rookie card. But with zero transparency on available cards and hit rates, it's all just a shot in the dark. Until now. Introducing Slab Packs from ArenaClub.com, the only repack that provides real value, a complete view of all possible cards, and clear hit rates for each one. Now, when I buy Slab Packs at Arena Club, it finally feels like I know what I'm getting. I was able to open an Arena Club slab pack, and I'll be honest, it was a lot better than what you normally do. Say you go to a card show, and there's a random innocuous brown bag of cards, and yeah, you can open it, and look, it's going to be junk. You know what I mean? Like, you know what you're probably going to get in those. Maybe you find that fun, and sometimes I do. Sometimes I like just opening up cards and saying, ah, hey, look at some random cards or whatever. But if you're really in this game to find value and find particular cards, it sucks to have to buy these mystery packs, and it ends up being, you know, almost nothing, you know, nothing of value. Not with Arena Club. You get a display, again, of all available cards, hit rates, grading. So you know that when you're opening up the slab pack, you are going to get something valuable. You are getting something good. And Arena Club, in addition to having those great slab packs we just talked about, is also a marketplace for card collecting, buying, trading, selling, displaying, all that sort of stuff. But those Arena Club slab packs, man, they are revolutionizing the repack game with transparency. After your pulls are revealed, they'll immediately be placed in your vault for safekeeping or trading and selling, and you can have them officially graded by Arena Club as well. So again, sending these things off, it's going to be officially graded by Arena Club. And the Arena Club grading process is accurate, fast, and transparent, with full grade rationale provided and explanation of how your card was scored. So whether you're buying, selling, trading, or displaying, Arena Club is the card collecting platform that you have to check out. So right now, I've got a special offer here for Voices of Wrestling Network listeners. You can get 10% off of your first purchase by going to arenaclub.com/VOWnet. Again, that's arenaclub.com/VOWnet. Now, that's a crazy offer. That's 10% off a $400 slab pack. $40 off right there. 10% off your first purchase. No matter what that purchase is, 10% off. Off. Again, that's arenaclub.com/VOWnet, arenaclub.com/VOWnet for 10% off your first purchase on Arena Club. And we thank them for sponsoring the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network. What's going on, guys? This is Rich from the Flagship Podcast here on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network. If I could have a moment of your time, I'd like to tell you about one of our sponsors, Eufy Video Lock. Eufy Video Lock is a smart lock, a 2K camera, and a doorbell, all 3-in-1, offering you triple security. So you can have everything in one device rather than installing many pieces on your front door. But it's not just for security. The Eufy Video Lock is also for convenience. No more concerns about losing keys, and you can assign passwords to your family members and see them coming back home via the integrated cameras. Some other great features we love about the Eufy Video Lock is it is easy to install and set up with just a Phillips screwdriver, no drilling required. Keyless entry, no more fumbling for keys when your hands are full. You never have to worry about kids losing keys or passing among renters. You also have 0.3 second fingerprint recognition and 1 second unlocking. Again, 0.3 seconds, it's going to recognize your fingerprints, and in 1 second, it's going to unlock. And with the AI self-learning chip embedded, the more you use it, the more accurate it will be. Also, no battery anxiety. You have a rechargeable battery in there that could last around 4 months, and you will get a low battery notification before it runs out. Passcode unlocking, a remote control with a 2K clear sight, see who's at your door, and control from anywhere through the Eufy app. With enhanced night vision, you can have optimized view even in the evening. You can also secure your package delivery by view and two-way audio. And then best of all, no monthly fee. A bunch of other brands out there are going to charge you a monthly fee. You have your recordings locally, and you never have to pay for storage. Customer service, Eufy's got you handled as well. They are on standby for you 24/7, so you can enjoy a worry-free experience with an 18-month warranty, all backed by their professional customer service team. Contact them anytime by telephone, email, or live chat. Personally, as a homeowner, I love my Eufy Video Lock. I have the ability to see what's going on when I'm not home, when packages has arrived, and really the thing I love the most about it, the ease of being able to lock and unlock my doors without having to fumble with my keys and reach in my pocket or, wait, no, crap, they're in my backpack, all that sort of stuff. All this is happening while my dogs are barking at me. You know what? Not anymore with the Eufy Video Lock. I touch it. 0.3 second fingerprint recognition, 1 second. Door is unlocked. Much, much easier. So if you want to jump on board with Eufy Video Lock, search Eufy Video Lock. That is E-U-F-Y Video Lock. Again, that's Eufy Video Lock, E-U-F-Y Video Lock, or visit eufyofficial.com/videolock to see how you can gain complete control of your door.
It was dumb.
Yeah, the long stare at the title belt, which wasn't going to lead to anything. And
stare at the title belt, and like, okay, that goes back to your like...
Just give it back to him.
What's the mens rea of Jay, though? Is Jay a guy who seriously is like, all right, I've been a tag guy my whole life. This is my friggin' title shot opportunity. This is the first one I've gotten in a decade. Yeah, my cousin's champion, but I think I can beat him. I know this guy. Is he that guy who really wants a title shot? Is he's just there to have fun? And they can't seem to decide from week to week. And this was just...
Well, to me, it's just, okay, if Jay just gives the belt back to Roman, does like a fist pump and goes on his merry way, we're good with that. But he does the, my precious, with the title. And you're just like, ah, stop
like,
that.
Why can't Jay see through that?
Yes.
Yeah, there's just weird stuff going on here where they think they're being cerebral, but what they're really doing, what they think they're doing is they're creating layers on these people.
Mm-hmm.
But what they're really doing is creating characters that don't actually exist in a real psychological headspace.
Exactly. Exactly. If they played this a little straighter, I think it'd be good, but they're playing the mellow. It's almost like if Roman had started this angle clean shaven and he started growing the goatee. Remember when they used to do that where it's like, he's going to have a heel turn because he started growing facial
hair? Right, yeah, sure. The hair's going black. You can kind of see it going that way, too.
Let's give a shout-out to our sponsors this week, MyBookie. It's actually fall, the end of summertime, and at MyBookie, that can mean only one thing. It's winning season. Winning season means doubling your first deposit. Winning season means free bets, super contests, Survivor, and more. At MyBookie, winning season is all about your chance to win big. We got the NBA playoffs, the NHL playoffs, Major League Baseball. Professional tackle football has started. College football looks to be coming in for as many weeks as we get it. The UFC and then some. The craziest sports summer of your lifetime is here going into the fall. It's simple. Make your picks, win big, collect your cash, invest in your intuition, select from hundreds of future bets, or you can bet games in real time with MyBookie's live betting. Not only sports, but pop culture, politics. If you can bet on it, MyBookie probably has it. Put that big brain of yours to good use. Use promo code ROPES and double your first deposit. New players get up to $1,000 in free play, designed to add more excitement to the sports you love and the games you bet. Thousands of cross sports wagers, props, and parlays await. Sign up now to bet with the best and celebrate your victory. Your winning season begins today only at MyBookie. Once again, use code ROPES and double your first deposit. And as always, we thank MyBookie for sponsoring shows across the Voices of Wrestling Network this month.
Hawkins, I'll give you something to bet on, Hawkins. Last week at Madison Square Garden, we all saw what Pumpkin Spice did to me in the ring. You took the belt off of Jeff Hawkins, you hit me in the back of the head like a coward, and you rolled me up using the ropes. Well, next week, you and I are going to be in a steel cage, Pumpkin Spice. There'll be nowhere to run, nowhere to hide, no Starbucks coming for you. You and me, Nassau Memorial Coliseum, Buster, I'll see you there.
Bored with the gourd. Wednesday night wars were both, I thought both shows were fantastic. Look, AEW did 886,000 viewers, 0.34 in 18-49, third place on the night. NXT, 689,000. I believe they got 31st on the night, so this isn't a contest. Interesting that the viewerships went down for both.
What do you attribute that to? Because I thought that was the more interesting factoid than like any of the Raw numbers this week. Is I thought there's a new normal last week, and I don't know what's going on this week.
To me, there's 200,000 viewers that will swing depending on what night of the week it is and watch wrestling no matter what. That's what it is to me.
Okay.
Because it seems like it's about a difference of 200,000 on both right now. So there's that. You know how in elections, in electoral cycles, you have one third who are Republicans, one third who are Democrats, and one third who are undecided? That's what this is. Everybody has their sides already decided, but there's that one third that can be talked into watching a show if they so choose, you know, or if it's on a different night. That's what I mean. Not necessarily on a given night, but
So maybe part of this, too, is it's more of a question of first view. It's not like, because I have a hard time believing that there are that many people who are watching. Well, I suppose there are people who are watching NXT and not AEW and vice versa. But I tend to think there's a lot of overlap.
Yeah, I do, too. And I think we watch both, and I think...
Well, I know we watch both. I don't think I could fake my way through this show for this
one. But I think it, if you looked at numbers after DVR, I think more people DVR NXT and watch AEW live.
That makes sense.
Because I watch AEW live and then I watch NXT. I think it just has more energy to it, and I enjoy it as a show.
Yeah, I think I like AEW's... Something, just everything about the way WWE has chosen to do this has felt... Like, I think they were at their best when they, you know, had the people banging on the hockey boards or whatever. Like, the Thunderdome has felt weird. I don't like it. I don't feel like it really adds anything. Like, if anything, I think...
But NXT doesn't have the Thunderdome.
No, I know.
Although SmackDown ratings are very good. That's the weird thing, is Raw is kind of... Raw held its own this week.
And they got Monday football to contend with, though. Like, you know.
Yeah. And then SmackDown has kind of improved a bit, which is kind of interesting. The Roman and Sasha Bailey stories are drawing people. I mean, it's not great, but it's over 2 million.
It's got to be the Sasha Bailey stuff's drawing a decent amount of eyes. Like, I mean, the other thing, too, is SmackDown. Okay. Yes, we'll forever dog on, like, Jeff Hardy segments and King Corbin segments, right?
People love them some Jeff Hardy, too. I got to tell you.
But people, like, this is why I was saying earlier, I get why they signed him again. And good on him for monetizing, like, a name at this point. Because, like, he's not really an act. We'll dog on those. But, like, a lot of times, SmackDown's a very watchable show. It's just, it's on your Friday nights. I think the other thing that's probably helping him right now, Jeff, is that more people are home on Friday nights right now.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you know, and you know, SmackDown's on. It's something to watch.
I would not disagree. Dynamite or NXT first?
What should I watch first? I watched Dynamite first this week. Let's do Dynamite first this week. Bring the boom. Dub-doo. Dynamite.
My favorite part of Dynamite was the quick squash match by MJF. I gotta admit, I think we need to stop the trope of pulling people from over the barricades in the ring. One act should be able to do that. Two acts is a little bit too much.
Yeah, no, Murderhawk Monster guy, Lance Archer, I think, has killed a lot of the... The problem with his ridiculous entrance is that, like, it kills your ability to do that in the show any other time because, like, you've got this guy who has it necessarily as a trope of his own entrance.
Yeah, I... But I mean, after the Lucha House Party, or not Lucha House, God, oh, I'm going to...
Are you talking, you want to talk about Luchasaurus and Jurassic Express?
No, I was talking the Lucha Brothers.
Oh, okay, Lucha Brothers. There's a lot of people who fit into that Lucha House Party mislabel.
Yeah, I know, I just...
A lot of Lucha.
I messed it up a bit. I liked that FTR Jungle Boy Luchasaurus match quite a bit. It's very weird what they're doing with Jungle Boy for me.
Jungle Boy is like, he's what Orange Cassidy needs to be worried about happening to him. A guy who it seems like they're interested in, but like then they don't know how to really turn that into a thing.
Yeah, just I if this were 1985, I'd see a lot of value in him kicking out of a lot of finishers. It's gotten a bit ridiculous how many finishers he can kick out of.
Well, here's the other problem, too. The kicks out of all the finishers because he's got just an unbelievable amount of heart. Like, what WCW was pretty good at getting this over with Rey Mysterio in, like, the mid-90s, 96, 97. He had the heart where most guys couldn't kick out of the jackknife powerbomb, but Rey Mysterio just had so much fight inside of him that you knew that he might kick out of it. With Jungle Boy, because of the way AEW does their matches, where everybody does like a ridiculous move and then you get a kick out and like a near fall, near fall, near fall, near fall, near fall, the audience has no way of even like necessarily registering that as, oh, that's Jungle Boy's gimmick. This guy's got more heart than anyone. Because like Chuck Taylor might kick out of like way too many near fall finishers that should be finishers. If you have a match against the Young Bucks, everyone kicks out of like three or four moves that should be a finisher in a wrestling match.
Yes. I liked the Will Hobbs introduction into the into what is a main event storyline. I thought it was great.
Effective. Yeah, no, yeah. Right. No, I thought Moxley did a good job making Hobbs feel like he belonged. And like mm-hmm. he did what you want a babyface to do to get over another babyface.
Yeah. And I think that's how you, I mean, if you're trying to build up a guy again after, you know, that's not bad to associate him with the world champ in your organization.
No, absolutely not. You know who I still think has a lot of gas left in the tank? Frankie Kazarian. I think, man, I enjoy
Frankie. That's a heck of a match.
Right? Yes. No, Kazarian's had a few of these like sneaky good matches here along the way this year. I've always been a fan of Kazarian's, but
I have not, oddly enough.
Interesting. You didn't like him in TNA in the early days?
I was mad at him for being put into Fortune.
Okay.
And then throwing out Desmond Wolfe. Because I loved Nigel. I thought Nigel was perfect for that second bad lieutenant role.
Sure.
And then adding Frankie Kazarian into Fortune and then kicking Desmond Wolfe out really ruined it as a faction for me. So I've always had a bit of a sore spot. Nice guy, though. Flew to Daniels and Kazarian were behind me on the plane to New Orleans.
Nice.
And
nice.
We talked
about
it.
And I loved Bad Influence when Daniels and Kazarian finally got together in TNA.
The Appletini gimmick?
Yeah, right. No. Like that, they had spot on music and everything too, dude. Like, no, like that was a good act. They were good. They were fun.
Chris?
I also liked, didn't he tag with Austin Aries at one point too?
Kazarian and Aries?
No, I'm sorry, that was Bobby Roode. All right, never mind. Go on.
Because Eva Lees and Thunder Rosa had some issues this week.
No. Eva Lees has some issues that she imposed on Thunder Rosa. let us not throw Thunder Rosa under the bus here. I she has had several outings that I think have, including the match at the pay-per-view, which I know a lot of people liked, but I thought was a little touch and go, to be honest. A number of these outings, I just have not seen things, and maybe I can rewatch them with different eyes and I might see something, but like most of the problems Thunder Rosa has been encountering during her matches thus far in AEW have been the result of the other person she has been working with.
Yeah, I tweeted out a thing where she stopped selling at one point. Chris is well aware, having done the Lucha Underground podcast for Voices of Wrestling, wore out her welcome there pretty quick.
And to that point, Thunder Rosa and Eva Lees, no strangers to each other because they were in that locker room as well.
I'd like to give her the benefit of the doubt because she tweeted out her house burned down this week. I haven't confirmed.
Okay, so like, here's the thing. If that
don't
was
come really, to TV, then
right. That's my point. If it's not that like I don't have any sympathy if that's an issue. No, of course. If the week my grandmother died, right? Like, you know, like if I didn't want to do the show or whatever, that's fine. What I wouldn't want to do to someone if I didn't think I was good enough to get on the show, I wouldn't get on the show and become a blubbering mess 30 minutes in and have Jeff try to scrape me off the pavement.
I wouldn't quit halfway through a match and just look like I was bored and then
the show and just start like telling fond memories. No, right. If you
and then start punching people like and laying it in because.
Everybody has different ways of grieving, right? Some people grieve in private and need time away. Some people come to work and they work through, they need to put some time distance between the situation and they work through it. But if you want to work through it, you got to work. So I had bad stuff happen outside of the ring. That is not why you started to sandbag in the middle of a full Nelson.
No.
You weren't like, oh God, think of the protected mountain lions. Like, that's not what was going on.
You know, mid-match, my love of supply-side economics came into play, and I just started thinking about... Oh, dear Lord. It's going to be a tag team match next week. I don't know if it's already been taped, but Sheeta and Thunder Rosa versus Diamante and Ivelisse. That could be interesting. That's all I'm saying. And then the street fight between Best Friends and Pride and Powerful. Love the dead president's makeup on our Proud and Powerful.
Yes, Proud and Powerful.
There's a typo here. Proud and Powerful. Was this 5 stars, Chris?
No. I will answer this for you. No.
Greatest street match, street fight in the history of street fights?
That it was. It was absolutely that, but it wasn't 5. No, yeah, I'm gonna split the difference on this one, Hawkins.
I love the match. It was five stars.
This is okay. It's a TV angle. I guess you could say it's a main event TV angle, but like if they had ran this on the pay-per-view and they did do this on the pay-per-view, when they put it on the pay-per-view card, it was a lower card angle. And I guess the defense of some of this stuff is, well, they're not giving away things. Okay, but what you give me still has to be enough. And Best Friends and Santana Ortiz, yes, it turned into a good little match here. This has been a dumb angle. And Santana Ortiz are goofs. And none of these guys coming. Yeah, they had a nice match here. And these guys are cooler now than they were 4 weeks ago. At least not in my book. Santana and Ortiz, I still got memories of one of those two slopping around in orange juice. That is my thought of these guys when I think of them right now. It's kind of my formative memory. And Best Friends is like a hug. And they're Orange Cassidy's buddies. And they were fighting over a van. Like, the stakes were low. They had a good match. I'm slightly biased against street fights, so I'm like not the guy to come to and be like, Chris, what's your favorite street fight? I'll be like,
I like street fights. I just, it's like when they did the Cole Velveteen Dream one.
Right.
There's too many.
That's what this reminded me of.
You can see the big spot coming a mile away. And I'd much rather
Here's
just
the
see
problem
the
with
fight.
These type of street fights is that they feel too movie-like. Now.
Yes.
And too planned out and too much like a skip match.
Yeah. There's set pieces that are trying to get to.
And I think here the problem for this Best Friend Santana Ortiz angle is that they didn't have this skip match to hide behind for the angle. You just don't have enough heat between these four guys to really, you know, justify a second clashing of the horns. You needed to have the stakes of the street fight angle to kind of put the smoke and mirrors on it.
I liked the roughness of it. You know, like at that one point, like at the beginning when like the wood bounces up and hits Trent in the face and he has to sell it for a second. I kind of, you know, I like when things don't go as planned in a street fight because they generally won't. I liked the blood after getting slammed through the windshield and stuff. You know what I hated? I hated the crowd. I think it was Brendan Cutler was one of them too, which... You know, the people standing around basically mugging for the camera for the whole thing. I get having the audience. They just took a little bit away from me for it.
Yeah, right. You don't want to have no audience because then, like, you worry that it overstays its welcome.
But you don't want the audience that's trying to get on camera, and that's what
right.
It seemed like to
me. You don't want them too proximate either, in my opinion.
Yeah.
No,
it's a street fight. Why are
right,
you all
exactly,
this close?
Exactly. Yeah. Right. Theoretically, in a street fight, they don't plan out audiences for people to walk because that would suggest boundaries and limitations.
Favorite street fight?
I just told you I don't have one.
Okay. I thought you might have a Kiss song.
Oh,
no.
Oh man, you know what? I'm like way behind in this journey of 1,000 years to get all these Kiss songs going up. But baby, I'm the king of the mountain and larger than life, as it were.
My thing is, I don't know if these were technically street fights or not. I remember really loving, it was Barry and Arn versus Doom. At that where they had cut the junkyard promos, it was originally gonna be Flair and Arn versus Doom, but Barry, they brought Barry in and they had a knockdown drag out. And then I remember, I don't think this was technically a street fight either, I think it was a quote unquote parking lot brawl, though, still, or maybe it was a junkyard, I can't remember the name of it, but the Regal Fit Finlay one from Nitro. where I think Finlay legit got injured in the course of that match because they got a little bit too into it. Do you remember that one? Where they went to the junkyard and were slamming each other on cars? Oh, dude, I may have to watch that. That match is awesome. All right, we'll finish with NXT. From the apologies and retractions department, Jeff Hawkins comes in and says, Shotzi Blackheart rose to the occasion, I thought.
Oh, now, it is sweet pain, as you might say, Jeff.
Is it?
To have to admit that Shotzi Blackheart... Like, look, she was not bad in this match, man. Like,
no.
She was not bad.
This is her best match since the Evolve match that was on that pay-per-view, I thought. I was pleasantly surprised. I was rooting for a good match. Don't get me wrong.
No, I'm not, like, rooting against her. But
yeah,
man,
I don't root against Shotzi Blackheart.
To the contrary. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah. It's one of those things where you come in humble and you go, Shotzi, I'm sorry for doubting you. You rose to the occasion in a big title match. I think they put her over strong on commentary, despite losing, because you always lose your first title match. I think she's getting this title eventually. She's the exact kind of thing that the main roster loves. She has a character. She's charismatic. And now that you have Hunter and his boys running creative on this thing, I think they give her the title, and Io gets moved up, probably.
You think Shotzi gets the title? Interesting.
I do.
Well,
who's going to be the number one contender in this battle royal or whatever the heck they're doing, this gauntlet
Candace.
Match or something?
I think Candace is.
Another EO Candace match?
Yeah, and I think Candace gets the title this time.
Oh. Okay. I just...
No,
I see Tegan and Candace. Yeah, I just...
Yeah. The Gargano thing, their whole Gargano Way angle only really works if the Gargano Way results in them both having titles at some point.
Imperium and Breezango over-delivered, I thought. I think it's a little too late to kind of try and rebuild Breezango, but it did give them some... It gave them some tough tag team credibility for me in some ways. They're not just goofs. They're really good here.
No, this was a good match, right?
Yeah.
Like,
this is what I want Breezango to be. This is kind of living up to the potential that we thought they could be.
Yeah, no.
As opposed to just, like, these gimmicky jerks who come out and, like... do an occupation every week. I've wanted them to kind of serious up the gimmick a little bit and show that they are great tag team specialists, and Imperium's a great opponent. I love Imperium. I'm never going to doubt them. I'm kind of upset that they're not the champs.
We need a little bit more character development from Breezango at this point.
Yes.
Like, I need them to be a little bit more intense. I need them to have slightly more specific motivations. At this point, whether it's like Breeze is just really into having the titles, or maybe they're I want them to be intense intense veteran baby faces.
Mm-hmm.
They like being champions. They're proud to be champions. Kind of an inversion of Imperium. Imperium goes, the mat is sacred. They, they claim to love wrestling, and they do in their way, but it's like also not quite the right way. Have Breezango be the guys, the baby faces who love the sport.
Sorry.
Who actually get, like, rather than have them be the whimsical, like, they like to have fun on their way to the ring, but once
they
get into the ring, it's all business. Have them actually be the baby faces who, like, do love the sport, do love being champions, do take it seriously, and are just being textbook, good, respectable babyface champions.
Tommaso Ciampa beat the aforementioned Desmond Troy. If you're going to beat him, why not just make him Denzel DeJarnette until you're going to decide to push him? That's my only
baffling
question.
Right.
Because I like that guy a lot.
I like him too. And I don't have a problem with Ciampa getting this new attitude established better. But I don't. Why change his name and then beat him? Like when they were beating Luke Menzies, they called him Luke Menzies before they actually gave him his new name.
Jake Atlas returns to challenge Ciampa. Sneeze again, sorry.
Jake Ellis is another guy who I think is in that Dimples Carrillo category of...
Boy, man, they look like
they
were doing
something
with them.
In these guys, and like, they don't.
It's like they were building him during the Cruiserweight tournament, and then nothing. And I don't get it. I really don't. I
marketable
think...
dudes, both of them, like specific niches that you can market towards. Good wrestlers, talented guys, good looking guys. Seem like can't miss things that you would be interested.
Built-in marketing if you want to use it LGBTQ outreach.
Yeah, and
I have
Carrillo
those letters mixed up.
Carrillo also appeals to the Spanish demographic. Yeah, that's what's getting at. Like no, you've got niches that you'd like to, you know, kind of broaden as the World Wrestling Entertainment Company. You'd want to be able to appeal to and WWE just looks at Atlas and looks at Carrillo and they go, you guys look like main event guys. And they're like, oh, and they're like, no, I mean like the show, main event. You'll be there next week. Enjoy it.
Caden Carter and Casey Catanzaro beating Xia Li and Jesse Kamiya.
Xia Li turned heel.
Why? Let me preface this. Xia Li is a natural babyface. She's energy. She's great. I get that they like to make foreign people heels. If they make her a killer, I'm great with it. If they make her just mean,
right,
I'm not.
Right. So obviously execution's going to matter here, but let's go in good faith here and like kind of put away what we expect out of WWE. I want to just throw a name out at you. This is not a straight one-to-one comp. Muda.
Oh God, yes.
So the idea is you got to have Muda as a heel, smaller dude, needs to be in control of matches, needs to get over the intense offense, the snap offense, and there's something about the methodical, like with Xia Li's kicks and everything, especially since she needs to be able to hit them in like set points and everything, the slow methodical pace of a heel styling works really well to get over all of the intense spots of Xia Li. Then when you want to flip her baby face, kind of in the way that they never quite were able to do here in the United States, but there are a number of different times where you could have with Muda. Then when you want to flip her baby face in this case, that switch is very easy to hit because you've established all the offense. Plus people have seen how devastating those kicks can be and how devastating, you know, Muda's moonsault and mist and all that other stuff is. And they want to be able to cheer the handspring elbow and all that stuff.
Yeah, I'm not sure about this. Has Xia Li gotten smaller? I know she's now really, she's ripped right now.
No, she's ripped and her hair is longer, which is like all extensions, but that might actually be kind of changing the way you're visually perceiving her.
Okay, she looked smaller to me a bit.
Well, she went from having like, you know, short mid-length hair to like having, you know, like way down the back, like extensions this week. So it's a very different look for her.
I loved that ending sequence, pinning sequence by Catanzaro and
Caden Carter.
And Caden Carter.
Yeah, no,
I thought that was great.
This is the match we've been saying they've been needing to have for a while. Mm-hmm. And so like I thought that this is all interesting. Jesse Kamea felt like the odd person out in this.
Yes,
whole thing.
She's the baby deer, baby gazelle.
Yeah.
She's lanky and awkward, but she's athletic as hell, and they don't know the gimmick they want to put her in.
She's
because
got
this is yet
she's
another
got
one
a thing, though, right?
Yes.
Like, you know who I think she could pair well with, as like a friends act or something. Like her and Tegan Knox seem to be of similar build.
Yeah, and her first gimmick was straight out of the Bayley babyface. You know, she was doing the Jesse
right.
show,
yeah, the Jesse
where
show
where she was going around, and then now. She was sultry for a while, and she was goofy, and now she's kind of back to kind of being friendly again.
They've got four or five different flavors for female talents in this company.
I want
Jeff,
all of her personalities to team. Give her a Sybil gimmick. We just don't.
That'd be fun. That
Which Jesse Kamiya is coming out tonight.
Have you seen that M. Night Shyamalan movie, Split? Let's
yes.
do that as a gimmick.
Yes. There you go.
I'm into that.
I'm actually... You know, in wrestling, they could do that kind of thing well if they try.
No, okay, that's something. If you had long form booking and you did I don't know if AEW would be the better of the two companies to execute it, but you'd really need to set this out. But like, if you had long form booking, something like an angle akin to M. Night Shyamalan's Split or like something inspired by that would be really, really cool. Yeah, I agree. Drake Maverick, Killian Dane.
What the hell?
I hate this Hate this. Like, I hated Drake Maverick. I'm done with this guy.
Seriously, this guy was the hottest baby face in the company at one point.
No, but you made him a complete goober. Like, I hate this dude.
Dope.
I hate his character.
I hate Killian Dane's reaction to the character.
Yes, the backstage segment where he's sitting with everybody and just laughing as he's watching the match. Like, who are these random people who are delighting in the torture of Drake Maverick? What is this random room? Regal goes in and talks to Dane, and just like the look of shame from Regal is what inspires Killian Dane to go to the ring. I mean, Regal should have went to Dane and said something like, if you don't go out to the ring, I'm going to suspend you. He goes down to the ring. Now we've introduced dramatic irony. We, the viewers, know something that Drake Maverick does not know, which is that Dane's down there to save Maverick, but he's not down there out of any like warmth of his heart, but because he has to do it because of his job. But instead, like, they didn't actually introduce a motivation other than just Regal came in and shamed him. Like, boo-hoo. Why does Dane care about that?
How are you feeling about the schism in the Undisputed Era?
Not the best execution so far. I think Kyle O'Reilly should be a face. So I like that part of it.
Cole and O'Reilly being the baby faces is interesting.
I would almost rather have everyone turn on O'Reilly and just build up O'Reilly. Like, I guess
the schism should have been O'Reilly and Fish, and then Cole and
Roddy stay heel.
I know they want to build Adam Cole as a babyface. I just think he's a better heel, to be honest.
So we're on the same page. Cole and Roddy as heels just makes sense to me.
Yes.
I don't know how to put it.
We've seen fiery babyface Roddy. It was fine for a while. They didn't capitalize on it. He's an outstanding heel.
Yeah, no, and he's especially as like a little cocksure heel. Like, he is such a good little prick heel. And O'Reilly's got such great babyface fire, and like Fish as his veteran mentor and every like it makes sense. Like, I really like O'Reilly, man. I he's a guy who I think should be an NXT champion. I think that there's a lot of untapped potential in that dude.
Then ending the night, Damian Priest getting tights straight out of Bad Company from the AWA / Brutus Beefcake. And Tim Thatcher, who continues to kind of be a rock in this NXT. I love the guy. I love this match. But I just don't see beating Tim Thatcher this much being a good thing necessarily. How did you feel about the match, and how do you feel about Ladies' Man? Now, not really Archer of Infamy too much more. Damian Priest.
I think Damian Priest, he went through a real trial by fire here. And I think this is a man who would appreciate my Kiss references. You forgot to mention the time traveler. What's his name?
Kushida and
I was so busy making the
Theory
Kiss reference, I forgot to mention Kushida.
I like hardcore Kushida. I like him. They're not gonna follow up on it though, unless they turn him heel.
With regards to Damian Priest, I say to you, Jeff, the street giveth and the street taketh away. And in this case, with Damian Priest, the street has taketh away portions of his clothing. Like, this Damian Priest gimmick, I think, is just, it's too busy. And I get that he's supposed to have
swagger. It needs one focus, and I would get rid of the Archer of Infamy nickname.
I would disregard.
If he's going to be Rico Suave, make him Rico Suave. I'm fine with that.
Yeah, yeah. Like, have him come out there. He's Damian Priest. He's a cocky badass. He's cool. You can't give him the Slash hat because you already got the Slash hat on someone else in the division.
And you don't want to make him too much like Velveteen Dream.
No,
in many ways.
No, I know. I'm like, the Ladies' Man thing, it feels like really weird. WWE has not done Ladies' Man in such a long time. It feels like almost like a callback to yesteryear, and kind of like a weird way.
It's an anachronism.
It's like wearing Abercrombie and Fitch like cargo shorts or something.
It's hard to do without being misogynist.
That's also true. That's part of the anachrony.
Because if you're a ladies' man, you use women and you send them on their way. ain't the most.
Love them and leave them. Oh, there's a bunch of Kiss songs with those type of themes, Jeff. Like, Torpedo Girl, Tough Love, All Night.
Are you saying Kiss might have been a philandering type of band?
I don't want to say that Paul Stanley and Gene Simmons might have had proclivities when it came to the treatment of women that we would not approve of. But they might say, I was born for loving you, baby. Or Turn on the Night.
Something about me, I actually did when I was doing short form improv back in the day, private birthday party for Gene Simmons, Shannon Tweed, and her kids.
Sounds like rock and roll hell.
Yeah, I like Damien Priest a lot. I hope they can give somebody as a contender. I wouldn't have wasted Tim Thatcher here because I think he's a takeover level opponent.
Yeah,
not necessarily
okay, so
a TV main event.
With Tim Thatcher, especially with the Thatch Ken school, right? I think what's important with him is it's not that he should never lose. He should lose. However, he should never lose easily, and he should never lose in the first encounter. Mm-hmm. So in like a Thatcher angle, the first match, he should win via disqualification or win via countout or something. Something to keep him in the chase. Something to get his confidence in his justification for why he holds himself in such high regard up. Because unlike other, like a Cameron Grimes guy who's going to the moon, like unlike that kind of guy, a heel like Thatcher is super calculated and is grounded in reality. Grimes is grounded in fantasy, right? So like with Thatcher, he needs reality-based events.
Grimes is a delusional heel.
Right, and so with
Thatcher's a planning heel.
With delusional heels, you can bounce them off the pavement and they come right back up like a rubber ball. Mm-hmm. With a heel like Thatcher, you smash them against a pavement, they shatter. So you need to make sure that there's always stuff there so that they can tell themselves it wasn't such a hard fall.
Yeah, with the Thatcher types, he does not plan to fall on that concrete. I have plans to avoid that and shatter. And if that happens, then everything's lost because the plan is out the window at some
point. And he needs to be there. What needs to be thought of when you're writing the Thatcher angles is when he loses this ankle, how is he explaining this to his students in the next recap package? And you start from that point and work backwards.
But yeah, Wednesday night was fun. I thought Wednesday night was a good night of wrestling and made up for the lousy Monday, in my opinion.
Monday was not good. It was not good.
Oh, Monday was lousy.
Yeah.
You can follow me at CrapGame13. You can follow Chris at ChrisNovembrino. You can follow the show at Shake Them Ropes. Once again, we'd like to thank MyBookie. Go to MyBookie.ag. Use code ROPES. Double your deposit. Unfortunately, we had some sad political news before we went to air in the passing of Ruth Bader Ginsburg. I'm sure Chris will be talking about on Don't Worry About the Government. Chris?
Yes, I will. First and foremost, I pledge allegiance to the state of rock and roll, baby. And you can come and check me out over at don'tworry.tv on iTunes, on Stitcher, and on Spotify. Don't Worry About the Government is the name of the show. I will be talking about Ruth Bader Ginsburg. I'm not going to make a Kiss reference. It just feels too close to the other topic. But you can find me at Chris Novembrino. That's all I got. Those are all my plugs.
I'm totally naming this episode Love Gun.
Fits like a glove.